Writer and composer Paul Bowles died today of a heart attack at the age of 88. Paul Bowles was one of the more mysterious writers in American literature and one of the more enduring cult figures. Norman Mailer once wrote about him, "Bowles opened the world of hip. He let in the murder, the drugs, the incest." Tobias Wolfe described Bowles' stories as austere, witty, violent, and sensuous, and described Bowles as one of our most serious and authentic literary talents. Bowles is best known for his 1949 novel, The Sheltering Sky, set like most of his nightmarish stories in northern Africa. It was adapted into a 1990 movie by Bernardo Bertolucci. Bowles lived in Tangiers, Morocco, for over 50 years. His presence helped make Tangiers a stop for many writers disenchanted with America, including William Burroughs, who wrote Naked Lunch there. I spoke with Bowles in 1993, when he was 82. He rarely gave interviews, and because of a bad leg, seldom left his apartment. He hadn't had a telephone for decades, but we were able to reach him through the phone of his downstairs neighbor. I asked him to describe what struck him most about Tangiers when he first visited in the early 30s.
Well, the way the Moroccans behaved, they always, I watched them by the hour because they all seemed to be performing for a theatrical audience. And they're wonderful doing that. That was something one could see at any moment of the day, anywhere. But above all, I loved their rituals, especially the religious brotherhoods, who were quite amazing. They still exist, but without the violence that they had back then.
What was the violence like within the religious brotherhoods?
Well, it depended on the brotherhood. The Aissawa, they threw themselves into a nest of cactus. They ate scorpions, they bit off the heads of serpents, they bit off the top of a bottle and chewed it, swallowed it. It was very strange. I'd never seen anything like it. And not at all not at all hoaxed, fake, no. They were not doing it for an audience. They were doing it because it had to be done.
Well, the things that you were just talking about, the kind of violence and pain or transcendence of pain, I think relate to some of the imagery in some of your stories.
Yes, well, yes, of course. I was particularly taken by the attributes of certain of the manifestations, the ceremonies. The Jilala, another group, I've watched, they slash themselves, arms and legs, and so till they're completely painted red, and then they lose consciousness, fall on the floor, they're brought back to consciousness by different music, different rhythm of drum, and then they claim that they have left this world. They claim they're walking on air when they come to, which must be very pleasant.
You have stories about Westerners who go to faraway places and get into deep trouble once they get there, torture, enslavement. I mean, your story, A Distant Episode, is about a professor of linguistics who goes to a northern African village looking for interesting dialects.
That's right.
And he ends up with his tongue cut out, and he's basically made into a village performing pet. And after the wound heals, it takes quite a while before the more existential feeling of pain starts to stir in his being. I'm wondering if there were any, like, nightmarish experiences that were ever a part of your life by virtue of having moved from the West.
No, most of my experiences have been very pleasant. I invent nightmares to balance the pleasantness of life.
Have you ever been afraid of your imagination?
No. How would it feel? What would you do?
Try not to fall asleep, I think.
That would be a delightful way to live.
Your father was a dentist.
Right.
And that must have been a pretty scary thing in a way. Kids always hate going to the dentist, but that was your father's job. So, I mean, and you think of the dentist as the person who administers pain.
That's right.
I'm wondering if this is if there's any. I feel silly even connection. Asking this. Any connection? Yeah.
Probably yes. Although I never liked any dentist, and I liked my father least of all. And he wasn't. I didn't think he was a very pleasant, polite dentist. Not with me, anyway. He made me feel like a criminal.
For what?
The way he would open your mouth and give me orders as though I were evil. And that's the way he functioned.
Your father used to do your dental work?
Yes. Very bad.
It hurt a lot?
Oh, it always does. But I had more than that. He took me to an orthodontist. And for 10 years, I had the braces on my teeth. A band on each tooth and an arch inside and an arch outside because the canines were coming in too high up. You know, children who have malformed teeth.
Mm-hmm.
But mine all came out all right, of course, because of 10 years of going and having the screws on the arches tightened, and then it pulls all over your mouth, both upper and lower. Very painful, and you can't eat. So I don't know. I think perhaps it's just as well to have crooked teeth.
I want to get back to how you were or were not changed by living in Tangier. There's a character named Ahmet in The Sheltering Sky who says, life is amazing. Nothing ever happens the way one imagines it is going to. One realizes that most clearly here. All your philosophic systems crumble. At every turn, one finds the unexpected. When you got to Northern Africa, did your philosophic systems crumble?
I don't think I had any.
Uh-huh.
No. I didn't know what North Africa was. Gertrude Stein brought me here, sent me here. And
You had met her in Paris, and you asked her where you should go?
That's right. I was staying with her out in Bérignan, down near Aix-les-Bains. And she had a summer house, lovely place. And after about 2 weeks, she said, well, where are you going when you leave? And I said, well, I guess I'll go to Villefranche. She said, oh, shame on you. Anybody can go there. And then we talked. Finally, I think Alice Tuckler said, why not Tangier? And Gertrude Stein said, it's a good idea. She liked it. She was here back long, long ago, I think the beginning of the century, which is quite a while ago. And she said, you'll like it. You like sunlight. You like heat. You'll get that there every day, all the time. I don't think she liked that, but I did, so I had a wonderful time. And I was with Aaron Copland. He wasn't very fond of Morocco.
You'd been studying with Aaron Copland?
Yes, I have, since the autumn of 1929, right.
You write that when you met Gertrude Stein, she said that you fascinated her because you seemed like the American suburban child with its unrelenting spleen. What do you think she meant?
I don't know. I remember she said, you started your life of crime too young. But what the crime was, I don't know. She was a very amusing woman.
Very elliptical.
Oh, yes, you're never quite sure what she meant. But she always meant something. And generally, it was perfectly sensible.
We're listening to a 1993 interview with writer Paul Bowles. He died today at the age of 88. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to our 1993 interview with writer Paul Bowles. He died today at the age of 88. when we were talking before about the religious brotherhoods that you observed, do you think of yourself as a spiritually absorbed person?
I don't know what that means.
Spiritually concerned. Are you interested in things that are mystical or spiritual?
No, I'm not.
So your interest is more about the behavior of the people than in a kind of like spiritual seeking?
Well, I don't know what spiritual things are. You know, I don't really know. I know the word, yes. I've never come into contact with spiritual people.
Do you feel a lot like an outsider living in a country where a lot of people are very religious and the religion isn't at all close to the religion or to the religions that you grew up near?
I never grew up with any religion. My family were all agnostics back to the, all four of my grandparents, too. So I never had any connection with any orthodoxy, whatever. And so I had no religious instruction. I wasn't taught to believe in God. I wasn't taught to do anything. Naturally, I never did. If you don't tell a child while it's young that there is God and all the rest of it goes with it, it's never going to invent it itself. It'll just go through life without an idea of it, which, of course, I think is preferable, but obviously millions of people don't. It's not that I have anything against religion, but I don't think I think it's a very good idea to force it into small children.
I know the thing I really wanted to ask you, if you have time for one more question, and I'm afraid this might be an unanswerable question. I think it might be too big a question, but let me give it a shot and feel free to tell me it's too big a question. Do you feel that you have been changed in any truly fundamental way by having uprooted yourself from the West and, you know, move to Tangier? And I'm also wondering if you wanted to be changed, if that's part of the reason why you moved so far away, if you wanted to be changed.
No. I never thought of myself as a person, what I wanted or didn't want, no. I always thought of myself as a recording machine. In order to want this or want that, you have to have an ego. And I don't think I have that.
You don't think you have an ego?
No, I don't think so.
You don't think of yourself as a person, you think of yourself as a recording machine.
That's right.
No desires?
To what?
I don't know, you name it. Eat, sleep?
Desire. Well, when I'm hungry, I have a desire to eat. When I'm tired, I have a desire to sleep. Yes. But what you're speaking of desires which transcend that?
Well, I don't know. I was thinking of all desires, because you said you had no ego.
Well, it's a silly thing to say, but I never feel that it's terribly important if I get what I want or if I don't. And I'm not in competition with anyone else in the world. I just am living, and soon I'll be dead. that's the way life is.
You said that very matter-of-factly. I mean, is this something that you're fearful of or dreading or just...
What,
that's death? The way it is? Yeah.
No, I don't dread it. How can you dread something? Death is part of life. There's no life without it, so you might as well not dread it. Painful death, yes. A pacific, tranquil death, I think, fine.
Paul Bowles recorded in 1993. He died today of a heart attack at the age of 88. I'm Terry Gross.